Now, Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding present the CBS Radio Network.
Before we do anything, let's have all of the cast sign in this evening and just prove that they're all here. Webley Webster?
Present. Powder 4.
Jerry?
What was it,
Barry McGoon?
I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You know, I've been wondering about that. Either you're mumbling more, or I just don't hear as well.
Well, I did. I just kind of...
Did you call my name?
I mumbled, Mary.
I didn't hear it because I was answering.
Well, that's why, then. But you are here.
Yeah,
Wally Blue.
Thanks, Blaisdell. Who else? Anybody else going to be
before
heard
going
from?
Before further, Tex Blaisdell is a perfect stranger to a lot of the listeners.
That's right.
Where you been, Tex?
Well, we've been on the road, Ray, the Smoky Valley Boys and myself, playing a series of one-nighters, doing our famous rope tricks, and playing for square dancers.
Tell me, is Romeo still with you?
Romeo, the funny one, is still with us and still making the folks laugh.
He makes you laugh every time you think of him. Tex Blaisdell. Well, that's enough of the cast. I don't think we... spend too much
time. Have another special treat for you tonight. Two of the persons of someone else you probably have heard of but have never heard on this program is Larry Wilkie, the noted dance band musician. He was supposed to have been here, but he had to cancel his appearance at our microphones. Thank you. Thank you. He sent along his housekeeper, Mrs. Ella Vernon, however, and maybe we can learn a little bit about Larry Wilkie from her. Hello there, Mrs. Vernon.
How do you do?
That's your parakeet there?
Yes, I decided to take Joseph along at the last moment.
Mm-hmm.
If I leave him alone in the house, he becomes peaked and starts pecking at the furniture. Last week, he wore a hole in Mr. Wilkie's favorite sling chair.
I see. Well, now, getting to the subject of our discussion, Mrs. Vernon, what sort of a man is Larry Wilkie? Can you tell us?
A one, a two, a three, a four.
I guess the parakeet Joseph gets that from Mr. Wilkie, huh?
As for Mr. Wilkie, he's quite shy until he gets a piece of sheet music in his hand.
And what happens then?
She should sing Avalon, then Ramona. Avalon and Ramona. Ramona and Avalon.
What happens
Avalon.
To Mr. Wilkie when he gets a piece of sheet music in his hand, Mrs. Vernon?
Well, he reads it and mulls it over in his mind as he reads, sort of a silent evaluation, don't you
and
know?
And if he likes it, what's the next step there?
She pigtails. Our new singing discovery, dressed in organdy. Just nice singing. Pigtails. Sue pigtails. Pigtails.
If he likes the sheet music, Mrs. Vernon, what personality change takes place?
Well, you see, he smiles. Then he lays the sheet music on a stand, and he kind of sways over it, smiling all the time. Actually, it's a fairly thrilling sight.
Well, does he study the song all day, or what? How long does
he... straw and water. I need straw and water.
I guess Joseph answered that question for me.
Well, you see, Joseph is sometimes unreliable. If Mr. Wilkie finds a sweet, uncomplicated song, the first thing he asks for is his baton.
And then...
Larry is a... well, troublemaker. Larry is a troublemaker.
All right, Joseph. Once he gets his baton, Mrs. Vernon, what happens?
Well, you see, I keep Mr. Wilkie's baton in an empty taper box, Mr. Elliott, which is about the right length. See, it's about, well, about this size, you see?
Yeah.
And it's wrapped in gray felt, which protects it from nicks and scratches.
Very
and
often,
humidity.
I see Mr. Wilkie tap a
felt
music
will
stand.
Absorb the
yes, I know it,
humidity so that the baton won't warp.
Mm-hmm.
No, warp.
Oh.
Warp! Warp! Won't warp!
All right, okay.
He picks up everything you say.
Tap it on the music stand, doesn't that fill it full of nicks and scratches, kind of?
Bruce's arms are too short to play the accordion. Too short. Too short. Billy Bidwell's arms are long enough. Long enough. They reached the floor. The floor.
Isn't the baton already full of nicks and scratches, Mrs. Burns?
Well, you see, sometimes I have to restore the baton, strengthen it, so to speak. I think I ought to put the cover on it.
I think it's
I fill in all the indentations with wood putty, Bob. Then I sandpaper it down. I finish it off with a very fine sandpaper.
Well, yeah, but how do you keep it from warping? That's the big problem, I suppose.
Oh, Bubbles are going to get me. Bubbles are going to get me. Here come some bubbles.
I think
some bubbles out of the wall.
Can you keep it from warping, Mrs. Vernon?
Well, you see, whenever I find out it's raining in the studio where Mr. Wilkes does his show, I advise him to cover his baton with a protective device.
About all the time we have here, Miss Vernon, and I think we've learned a good deal about Bandmaster Larry Wilkes just from what you said.
Oh, all right.
Thank you. Goodbye, Joseph. Thank you both for coming up here. Nice lady she was.
Yeah. Hey. Tuesday, July 28th, 1959. Entirely overlooked in unrolling summer madness. With these immortal words from Bob and Ray.
Just a moment now, we'd like to remind you that on this very day in 1907, in Chickenfoot, South Carolina, a man by the name of Luther Bannerman was born.
Luther Bannerman, a name to conjure with.
Maybe you're unfamiliar with his name, considering that Mr. Bannerman never did anything to bring him to public attention. But
the important thing is that today he's financially sound thanks to investing in United States savings bonds.
As he himself puts it, I like savings bonds. They make money for me, and I like money.
Hats off, we say, to greedy Luther Bannerman. By the way, wouldn't it be a good idea for you, too, to invest in those great U.S. savings bonds?
Yes, sir. Buy bonds.
Yes, sir, Rudy. And now, chocolate cookies with white stuff in between them brings you another episode of Lawrence Spechtenberger, Interstellar Officer Candidate.
In our last episode, Lawrence Bug Mellish and the Dean of the Interstellar Space Academy quickly subdued Akbar and took his invention, the one which would make people laugh and possibly control the Earth, back to the Academy. Now, in Bug and Lawrence's dormitory, we hear...
Now, let's see. It appears to be transistorized throughout, Bug.
Yeah, it's a fine piece of workmanship, Fechtenberg. You've got to credit that little guy.
I was going to say, actually, this is very simple in its construction here. It's a wonder that we didn't think of it before. You see, the way these gamma rays react off this piece of silicone gives off a ray that causes people to laugh.
Yeah, well, what's that pocket comb have to do with it? See right there, mounted on the top?
It's not a pocket comb. Come on,
Well, Mellish. It looks like a pocket
comb. A small antennae.
Oh.
See, it picks up its power from the sun. This is solar powered.
Hey, you're not turning that on, are you?
Sure.
It seemed to need it. Hey! Oh, hey, stop!
See if it was still working. Yes, the whole dormitory here at the Space Academy broke into gales of laughter.
What a fiendish brain that Akbar has.
What a weapon this is.
Where have they got him now, Fechtenberger? What are they going to do with him?
He's downstairs right now talking with the Commandant. I'd certainly like to hear that conversation.
Shall we fade out and then come back on the conversation between the people? And so, Akbar, as soon as Lawrence Fechtenberger and Mug Mellish get here, we'll continue with our questioning.
And you'll get no information out of me.
Oh, Fechtenberger.
Hi.
Hello there.
Hello, Commandant.
Hello,
sir.
Akbar. Yes, Fechtenberger, don't stand on formality.
No, all right.
You have to decide what to do with Akbar and his invention.
Well, I have been thinking upstairs, Commandant, along with Mug here. And
yes?
We've agreed that it would be unfair for us to, well, to lock up this Akbar.
But he's a madman, Fechtenberger, a madman.
He is mad, but I don't think he deserves to be locked up. I think what we should do is to keep him here on our staff. Give him a job as an instructor in the science department.
George, I never thought of that. It might be practical at that. He has a brain, albeit fiendish.
A Grimalkin?
And Grimalkin?
A Grimalkin.
A Grimalkin.
Well, what suddenly brought to mind Akbar's Grimalkin? And what will the men at the Space Academy do with his strange, laugh-provoking machine? Be sure and join us next time when we'll hear Lawrence Fechtenberger say,
"To send him to the moon like that, sir, would be a crime."
In the next episode of Lawrence Fechtenberger, Interstellar Officer Candidate.
Okay, let's see. We have enough time, I think, to talk to several members of the audience. This time we'd like you to ask us questions, and we'll try to answer them as best we can. Let's see. How about you there in the first row?
Me?
No, not you. The one beside you. That other
I
part.
Thought you were looking at me, and I was only prepared for my portion of the program inasmuch as I play the part of the commandant of the Space Academy.
Well, you portrayed your part.
Yes.
You're over for the day, you
well,
know.
I was sitting in the cast chairs there, and I thought...
Uh-huh. Well, do you have a question you'd like to ask, Bob and Ray?
Well, maybe I could think of one. Which do you prefer, the greater or the lesser Antilles?
Well, I never given that much thought. I suppose if I'd have to make a decision, I'd have to say I'd prefer the greater Antilles.
Why would you say that, Ray? Is there any particular basis that you have to make that?
Is there more of them, or are they bigger or something?
I know very little about them.
I think I'd take the Greater Antilles.
Yeah, among the Lesser Antilles, you have your Lisbon Antigua. I know that, which is very beautiful.
Yes, that's nice.
And that might make up for some things that
well,
a greater number would offset.
I don't know if you want my comments on it.
Who are you, sir?
I'd take the. I'd rather not give my name now, but I'd take the Hebrides. You could keep your Greater Antilles and the Lesser Antilles together. I'll take the Hebrides
in contrast to either one of the Great.
If you would toss in the Firth of Forth.
Well, that
what
of course.
Kind
would,
of talk is honestly. I don't know whether my radio has gone crazy or what.
Maybe we should go for a different question
toss
from somebody
in the
else.
Firth of Forth. This is ridiculous.
You couldn't toss in the Firth of Forth.
I have a question I'd like to ask you guys.
All right.
Why does Bob always make faces at Ray when Ray ain't looking?
Well, that's a question that's been asked several times before, and
I mean, he puts his hands to the side of his head, makes like donkey ears.
I know.
I don't know whether Ray knows that or not. I don't want to. You know, cause any trouble here.
No, I don't think
it's
causing
trouble. I don't want to make a celebrity out of it.
I see. No, that question has been raised before, and it's just kind of a little quirk of mine, I think, that I've gotten into the habit of over the years. It's one of those things that's
okay,
hard to explain.
It's clear. Bob, I never...
you never noticed that.
No.
Well, you've never been looking. You
know, no, I'm so preoccupied with getting my work done.
Why do you... I have a question I'd like to ask you. Why do you often... When you talk, and I think I know the answer, why do you hold your hand in front of your face when you're talking? Or
well, you see, that's because you asking me that.
No, I was asking Ray.
Oh.
I figured it's because it was cheap animation or something like that.
Well, Bob, that is the answer. That is the true secret there, yes. Look, the hands of the clock are grabbing us by the throat, so why don't we run off and then say so long in about 10 seconds.
Okay.
Until tomorrow, this is Ray Goulding reminding you to write if you get work.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumbs.
Walt Whitman brings us back on to Arthur Godfrey Time tomorrow on the CBS Radio Network.